And we picked up a little bit on the topic that we're going to be discussing now in the first session. And this topic for the second session precisely is scalability. And I'm being joined here by Sarah Azoubi, as well as Mustafa Albassem. Both of them are researchers with University College London, and they've been working on blockchain for the past couple of years. I believe both of you are doing PhDs.
Yep.
So one interesting thing I like to ask people is usually how they came to be involved with blockchain, because I think in that space especially, there's a lot of people with different backgrounds. And I was wondering how you got into that space and what your main focus right now is. Let's start with Sarah.
I started my PhD in computer science, and first I was interested in anomaly detection. And one of my supervisor at this time suggested to me that I look at blockchain, because you know what's great with blockchain is everything is public. So if you want to do some kind of machine learning anomaly detection, then that's really easy compared to doing it with let's say financial data, where you need to get the data from a bank, which is very problematic because it's private. So I had a look at blockchains, and that was 3 years ago, and I really loved the technology, and then I started working on this, and now I'm not doing anything related to anomaly detection because I just love the tech so much. So I just started working on this. So that's how I got into it.
So can you tell us a little bit about some of the projects you're working on right now?
Okay, so as part of my PhD, I've been doing a lot of research on consensus protocol. Especially, I've been designing a proof of stake consensus protocol called Frontomet that you can find online. And also, Mustafa and I, we also wrote a paper that is a systemization of knowledge that kind of compare traditional consensus protocol as we were doing them before blockchain with now this new blockchain consensus protocol that are very different. And especially personally, I'm very interested in how we can incorporate game theory into security in order to design better system, because I think that's what blockchains are doing, is they're really using incentives and economic arguments in order to design better systems.
That
so I'm really interested in this.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good. And what about you, Mustafa?
So I kind of became interested in peer-to-peer technology and decentralization even before I heard about Bitcoin or blockchains. So back then, there was technologies like BitTorrent, for example, and peer-to-peer file sharing. And I was kind of interested in that from an early age. And so in how do you decentralize things, generally speaking? So then when Bitcoin came about, I was quite interested in that. And I did, when I was doing my undergraduate degree in computer science, for my final year project, I created an Ethereum smart contract to create a decentralized identity management system. Now there's hundreds of them, but this was back in 2014, back when Ethereum was only a few months old.
You were way ahead of the wave.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a original idea, but at the time it was, but then everyone had that idea as well.
That's pretty interesting. And what is some of your research focused on right now, and what do you work on in your free time as well?
So at the moment, my research is focused on layer one scalability. Specifically, how do we actually scale the base layer of a blockchain to have more data on chain, but without actually decreasing the amount of security that you have on the blockchain, and without decreasing the decentralization or the decentralization of the blockchain.
So for those unfamiliar, basically the scalability issue has to do with the number of transactions that blockchains can process. And right now, Bitcoin processes around 6 to 8 transactions per second, and Ethereum can handle between 15 and 20 or something like that. And of course, that's not nearly enough to handle millions of transactions. And I was wondering, what do you think is the main problem with scalability? And then what are the problems with looking for solutions to solve, to get away with those bottlenecks?
Well, I mean, the main challenge of scaling a cryptocurrency or a blockchain is that it's not that it's hard to scale it. It's hard to scale it securely. Even though Bitcoin can do 7 transactions, 6 transactions per second, if you remove the block size limit and you gave all the nodes in the network gigabit connections, Bitcoin can handle millions of transactions per second. Bitcoin can scale unlimited to unlimited transactions per second, but it wouldn't be decentralized because everyone would have to store all of those transactions. So the challenge is, how do you actually scale it while keeping the decentralization of a blockchain, which is the whole point.
Why is that the whole point, and what are some of the advantages of having a decentralized system? Can you, just for those unfamiliar with the concept, explain that?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of debate around this. Why do you really need decentralization? And I think there's several aspects to it. I think the main aspect, so I would say there's two aspects. One of the aspects is censorship resistance. That is the main kind of goal that decentralization tries to achieve. The fact that you can send money from A to B or run an application without having any third party to actually censor that transaction or application. And that also plays into the second point I'm going to make, which is you can create applications or transactions that don't have to rely on a third party middleman or a government or a regulator. So you can have completely voluntary transactions or agreements or contracts between two people without having a third party interfere with that or intermediate with that or take a cut from that. So that's good from an economic perspective because you eliminate a middleman, but it's also good from a social perspective because you don't have a middleman that can misbehave.
That's pretty clear. And what about you? I'm very curious to know your take on scalability and what are some of the main concerns with scaling securely.
Well, yeah, I think that the problem with Bitcoin is like, you know, it's not scalable kind of like inherently due to like this proof of work. Like we require the proof of work, you know, to take like 10 minutes. That's just how it works and that's how we ensure security. So really, I think that if, you know, we want to change that, we really need like fundamental change. So so I think that at the moment in the security, you know, research community, there are a lot of different ways to do it. So, you know, we have like layer one, Mustafa is working on this and charging and things like that. For me personally, I'm also looking at just like alternative consensus protocol. How can you just like get rid of this proof of work? Because like, not only it's not scalable, you know, we have to wait like this 10 minutes and then this block, you know, they have a you know, size limit, so we cannot have too many transactions, but also we have this big problem of energy. So I think also one very interesting alternative would be to just come up with a new like consensus protocol. And then we have this layer two solution that maybe we've heard about. You know, the idea is like instead of having, you know, putting all your transactions on the blockchain, you're going to do like transaction off chain. So for example, let's say Mustafa and I, we want to, you know, transact together. So we could just do that like on our own and just, you know, put like two transactions in the blockchain that will kind of like settle the final balance where we say, okay, we're done transacting. There is also some kind of like layer zero transactions now that are being researched, but I think it's slightly like less popular. It's more like looking at the network level. So I think there are a lot of you know, exciting way that we can change this, but I think it's definitely like a fundamental change that needs to be done to the, you know, the core of the technology.
And you already mentioned proof of work, mm-hmm. and proof of work, for those that might not know about it, is basically the consensus algorithm used by Bitcoin. It uses computing power to solve very difficult puzzles, and that's how it keeps the network secure. But you're working on another alternative called proof of stake. Can you let us know how proof of stake works and what are some of the advantages?
Okay, so yeah, you've explained like briefly proof of work. So the way like sometimes we see it is like in proof of work, there is a leader that is elected and that is like the miner that gets the right to create the block, you know, and this leader is elected proportionally to their computational power because they have to solve this like proof of work computational puzzle. And in proof of stake, you can think of it of a leader is elected and get the right to create a block proportionally to the amount of stake, meaning coins that they have in the system. So it will mean that, for example, someone, you know, that owns 10% of, you know, all the coins, they will be like elected leader 10% of the time. So 10% of the time, they will be the one who creates the new block. So that's, you know, the main idea behind proof of stake. And then the idea is like we won't have to spend all this energy doing the proof of work. And also another advantage that comes with scaling is that we don't have to wait, you know, this 10 minutes in order to produce a block because blocks are just created instantaneously.
And I've oftentimes when I kind of researched proof of stake, one of the main arguments levied against that is that it's not as secure as proof of work. Can you touch on those on that criticism and explain some of the disadvantages that come with proof of stake and what are some of the main challenges when it comes to that.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true, because as I said earlier, like, the security of Bitcoin, it really comes from the proof of work, and it really comes from the fact that it costs money to create a block. And so with proof of stake, we have a lot of inherent problems. So for example, there are three famous ones. One is called the nothing at stake. So the idea is, like, let's imagine that we have a fork. Then, you know, the miners in the system, because it doesn't cost any money to create a block, they will just extend each chain. And really, we have no way of coming to consensus because it doesn't cost any money to create blocks. So, you know, all the forks was flourished. So that's one aspect. There's also grinding attacks. So the idea is, like, similarly, if it doesn't cost any money to create a block, let's say you are elected leader, like I'm elected leader, I can create, like, as many blocks as I want and try to, like, grind through the parameters, you know, tweak them in order to find one that's maybe gonna make me elected leader, you know, in the next round, or is gonna give me, like, an unfair advantage over the network. So that's also because it doesn't cost any money to create a block. And lastly, there are long range attacks. So the idea is, like, let's imagine that we have participants that have created a blockchain and then they just leave the system, you know. So they don't have any more coins, any more stakes in the system. Then an adversary could bribe them, buy their key that they use, you know, to create the whole blockchain, and just rewrite the entire chain. Like, similarly, you know, it's not proof of work, so they can just create block instantaneously with these keys, and then we'll have a fork.
So basically, they manipulate the record, and then they can...
Exactly.
Okay, so...
That's very challenging, indeed.
So, as researchers, I imagine that, one of the things that you need to do is to pay attention to the rest of the industry and look for the best solutions. And I know that Mustafa, for example, is a co-founder in a company that is working on a different concept for a distributed ledger technology, and it's called a directed acyclic graph. Can you maybe explain the difference between a standard blockchain and a directed acyclic graph, and then what are some of the disadvantages and advantages of using a DAG instead of a blockchain?
Are you talking about the Blockmania consensus protocol?
The chain.
Chain space itself isn't a DAG. It's just a blockchain.
Oh.
It's a sharded blockchain. Sharding is basically a means that you can use to split the blockchain into multiple blockchains that can interoperate with each other, and you can do transactions across them. So I guess it kind of is a DAG, but not in the same way that IOTA is a DAG, for example. So with sharding, you can it's kind of like, at the moment, the way the blockchains work right now, if you only have one blockchain, they can only process transactions. There's no concurrency there. They can only process one transaction at a time. So it's kind of like running a payment system with one core CPU. So the idea of sharding is to increase the number of cores or threads in your machine so that you can actually process transactions in parallel, and different nodes in the network could actually reach consensus on those transactions.
So are there some disadvantages to using that approach of solving scalability?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like one or the other. I think you need, this approach is specific to layer one scalability. And ultimately, you do need to scale. Like, in my opinion, at the moment, the way I see it, sharding is the only true layer one scalability solution. The only alternative is to increase the block size, but that's going to decrease the amount of decentralization. So with sharding, you can actually make it more easier for people with less resources to validate the blockchain, because they don't have to validate the whole blockchain. They only need to contribute to the validation of it by validating a subset of the state of the blockchain. So you don't have to run you don't need a huge data center to validate the blockchain. You can contribute to the validation only with a small computer or something like that. But we do have another consensus protocol. We do have a consensus protocol called Blockmania, which uses something like a DAG. To reach consensus between nodes in a between the nodes in a shard.
And just for those that are not familiar with the term nodes, those are basically the validators on a network, the people that confirm transactions.
Yeah, well, in this case, I'm referring to the people who are voting on blocks or reaching consensus in blocks. So it's kind of an alternative to Nakamoto consensus. So Nakamoto consensus is basically what Bitcoin uses, which is proof of work plus the longest chain rule. And the kind of drawback behind Nakamoto consensus is that it has slow finality. So you have to wait like 6 blocks or something to be sure that your transaction won't be reversed. But the really good thing about Nakamoto consensus is that it's very efficient. I mean, to get consensus on a block, you only have to send and receive one message as an individual. Whereas there's kind of like these more traditional consensus protocols from the 90s. One of them, for example, is called Practical Byzantine Fault Tolerance. They achieve finality really quickly, but they are really not inefficient in terms of how many messages you have to send between each node, between all the consensus participants in the network to reach that finality. So with Blockmania or other kind of consensus protocols, like I think Casper is trying to do that, is to kind of try to bring it to mix in the best of both worlds to kind of have a more efficient consensus protocol, but with to kind of mix the Nakamoto consensus in a way with those traditional consensus protocols to have faster finality more efficiently.
Okay, and I'm really curious, so from the perspective of scalability, are there some projects in the space that you're particularly excited about, and why? Maybe Sarah?
I'm actually quite excited about, you know, the layer two solutions. I think there are a lot of them that are flourishing right now. I think there are still like a lot of inherent problems with them, but I still find that it's a nice alternative, and especially at the moment there are some that are being like deployed, you know, in the real world. So I think it's also nice to see like this this being deployed. Then I mean, I think in terms of layer one, I think like most of the research is really around sharding. I'd be curious to see like, you know, more. Is there, you know, other ways that we can that we can achieve this other, you know, than sharding or alternative consensus protocol? I think it would be nice to have some novelty. But at the moment, yeah, I think like layer two are quite an exciting thing to look at.
What about you, Mustafa?
Well, I'm quite excited about Chainspace, obviously. Yeah. But I'm also generally kind of excited that there's quite a lot of sharding projects now.
Yeah,
we've kind of seen an explosion of them over the past year, and they're all kind of trying different approaches and different designs, and I think it will be quite interesting to see how that plays out and which one kind of comes out on top and which one, you know, what are the trade-offs that are being made. Mm-hmm. I'm also quite interested to see how Ethereum 2.0, or as it's called, Serenity now, how their new kind of protocol will play out, because they're implementing sharding as well, along with a bunch of other protocol upgrades. And I'm also interested in seeing how this technology called Plasma plays out. So Plasma is kind of like a layer 1.5 scaling solution. It's kind of like side chains. Anyone can create their own blockchain that interoperates with the main chain, but it's secure in the sense that if that side chain misbehaves, then you can simply withdraw back to the main chain. And there's like 50 different flavors of Plasma now, and it will be kind of interesting to see and lots of implementations as well. And it'll be interesting to see who makes the first practical application on top of it.
So, University College London just opened their first blockchain program. I think it was earlier this year, I believe, or it was last year. And I was wondering, as people who are already in that program, what is the research process on the inside? Do you guys come up with the topic of the research yourselves? Or do you work with the other researchers in UCL? Does UCL ever give you any direction into what they think you should be looking into? And are you happy with that process? And do you think there's room for improvement?
Well, what do you mean by program? Do you mean like, I mean, we've been doing research at UCL for more than a year now. So.
But they just recently announced their own separate kind of blockchain department, I believe.
Right,
I saw
the announcement. Blockchain Technologies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
He was older than me.
Okay. Yeah. People often have a misunderstanding of what being a PhD student is. it's not really being a student. It's basically a full-time job where you're a researcher. It's not really that different to actually being a professor, except that you don't have to teach and you have more time to do actual research. And I think, well, I can't speak for Sarah, but because we have different academic supervisors.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, it's very flexible. So because my funding isn't tied to specific projects, so generally speaking, I choose what I want to work on, and I have a lot of flexibility in choosing what interests me, and also joining other projects within the group that interest me as well.
You mentioned that it seems to me like you almost want to focus more on the research and less on the teaching. And I was wondering, how are the students?
Oh.
When it comes to blockchain, are they interested in the technology? Is it difficult to teach on that topic?
So, I think you can talk about that because you did TAing.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say so. Yeah. Actually, this year, for the first time, we're going to have a cryptocurrency class at UCL, and it's starting only next term. So I can't answer right now, but I can just tell you that next term at UCL, for like the computer science student, we're going to have a cryptocurrency class.
I would be very curious to see the course manual for that.
Well, I mean, we are working on this. So my supervisor, Sarah McElhone, is going to be the one teaching it, and me and other of her students, we're going to be like being like teaching assistant, as we call it. So so they're going to be a syllabus online. So maybe you can find some resources. But yeah, we'll be like covering a bit of everything, so the students can have an idea of like all the problem in the space, from like the topology, you know, to the like network and consensus and economic also argument. So we've kind of have like a big overview of the whole space. So maybe we won't go, you know, into like too much technical details. For example, we won't, you know, see like the details of like Zcash and how this zero knowledge like cryptocurrency work, but at least students will get a good overview. And if they want to like keep doing research with us, this will give them the opportunity to see what area they are interested in.
Okay,
I'll tell you more maybe next time.
I'll be reaching out.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's the first time we're doing it at UCL, so.
Yeah, but we also have master's students who are doing projects on blockchain, whether it be writing smart contracts, for example, or more theoretical aspects.
So for my final question, I was wondering if you had to make a guess, how much time and under what circumstances would we be able to come up with a blockchain solution that is also a commercial grade type production, so basically you can handle millions of transactions. Want to start with you?
So what's your question?
Basically, the question is, what's your timeline, or at least how long do you guess it would take to reach to a point where we can securely scale blockchains to the point where they can process millions of transactions, but at least can serve millions of people without any hiccups and can also keep them secure. And would there be a specific circumstance or condition for that to happen?
Well, I think, like, to be fair, in terms of technology, I think we could reach that level quite soon. I think that the main problem with having, you know, like, you know, tens of, not millions, but like thousands of transactions is more like the mainstream adoption. And I think that even if us researchers, we come with like technical solutions that are going to scale well, there are still a lot of problems, for example, like usability and user experience, that's going to make it hard for everyone to use blockchain. So I think that before we see like, you know, Bitcoin or like any other currency used, you know, like on a, you know, mainstream, like worldwide level, it will be more of a usability problem than actually a technical scaling problem, if that makes sense. So I think we'll solve this problem faster. I don't know if you agree.
Well, I'm actually very optimistic because I kind of feel like, as of now, all of the kind of major kind of core challenges of scalability mostly have answers to them now. Mm. Like we know how to do sharding now. We know how to do layer 2 scalability. We know how to do payment channels. We know how to do skate channels. All of those things are kind of past the research phase now. They are now in the implementation and engineering stage, and lots of different projects are actually implementing it right now. Mm. And some of that stuff is you can play with it right now. There's testnets and whatnot. So I'm actually very optimistic, and I think 1 to 2 years from now we could see a very scalable blockchain. Even Ethereum's roadmap is about 1 year to release Serenity. If you asked me 2 years ago, I would have been a lot more pessimistic, because I just didn't see how sharding could work, for example, securely. But now, I'm quite optimistic about it, and I think once we can actually, I think we can actually have millions of transactions per second using layer 2 solutions or layer 1.5 solutions, and I think that will actually make it much easier for usability to happen and for mainstream adoption to happen. Because I think one of the reasons why right now that adoption isn't happening is because if you want to develop application on the blockchain, it's really expensive for the user to use. You have to pay huge transaction fees. So you can only really do applications on the blockchain if they're financial applications where there's a real need, where the user doesn't mind paying for that. So and there's lot, and so if you can have lots of transactions per second, then people could have a lot more applications on the blockchain that are non-financial, for example. And I don't think every application necessarily has to need a blockchain. Like I think CryptoKitties is a great application. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need a blockchain, but like
That's a very interesting way to end that talk, but yeah. I'm very happy you guys came here and joined us at Hard Fork Decentralized and you demystified some of the issues around scaling blockchains. We're going to be closing this session shortly and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Please stay tuned with us.